This is Rejected Knowledge, and this is Your Life is Their Toy, Merchants in Medicine, by Emmanuel Josephson, M.D., from 1948. Quote, "The bane of modern medicine is a merciless commercialism," unquote. Dean Lewis, Johns Hopkins Hospital, October 1937. Quote, "At the present time, the electorate of the American Medical Association is apathetic and inarticulate. It is allowing the medical politicians to run things about as they please, and official spokesmen hurl their thunderbolts of wrath at all who differ with orthodox doctrine," unquote. Dr. James H. Means, president of the American College of Physicians, April 6, 1938. Quote, "Apathetic and inarticulate? Muzzled would be a truer word," unquote. Heatedly editorialized, The New York Times, April 8, 1938. Foreword. During the past century, there has been a great improvement in the art of medicine. Some of this improvement does not represent a real advance in medical science, but constitutes the process of retracing ground that was lost when young medical science arrogantly threw aside the age-old tradition of medicine that accumulated and was handed down since the origin of man. But real advance has been made. If this aspect of the subject is slighted, it is not because of failure of appreciation of it. The attitude adopted is prompted by a realization of how much greater might have been the advances of medicine if the abuses discussed did not exist, and by an appreciation of how much needless misery and inexcusable suffering might have been spared mankind. Health and life are man's most precious possessions, and anxiety to preserve them is natural. It is not surprising, therefore, that they have been exploited since time immemorial. Every age has had its charlatans, quacks, and medicine men. Much in the same measure as social organization has attained its highest pitch in the present era, the exploitation of health and life today has reached its zenith. Never before in history has there arisen such an extensive conspiracy about the problem of public health of entire nations, involving well-organized, opposing political and commercial groups. The consequence of this welter of exploitation is the sacrifice of human comfort, happiness, health, and life. It cannot be gainsaid that the average span of life has been greatly lengthened in the past century, but it also cannot be denied that mankind could be spared much misery, maiming, and suffering if the rackets revolving about health could be eliminated. Mankind has felt quite helpless before these rackets, though their existence long has been surmised. But the attitude adopted has been much like that of the ostrich. Quote, "Why shall we face the horrors of the situation and permit ourselves to develop a fear and consternation of the medical care and institutions which we must accept when ill? It will only aggravate matters," unquote. This attitude implies a failure to realize that most of these rackets will shrivel and vanish when exposed, and the balance can be destroyed easily by the force of public opinion and action intelligently directed. It is my purpose to expose them and to point out how the public can act to protect itself. A word of explanation is in order regarding my use of the word racket. I use it in the colloquial or slang senses, in all their shades of connotation. As defined in the Practical Standard Dictionary, these senses are as follows. 2. Slang, U.S. Any occupation by which money is made legitimately or otherwise, i.e. a scheme, plan, or proceeding. There should be no difficulty in judging from the context which sense it is desired to convey. Some of the passages undoubtedly will be resented and regarded as exposing their subjects to derision. But I say truthfully and sincerely that my motive is not malice. It is the desire to protect the health and life of the public and to see justice done. Chapter 1. Merchants in Medicine. Origins of the American Medical Association. An advertising quack was the quote-unquote leader of the American medical profession and boss of the American Medical Association during the last four decades. But this would not surprise informed persons, for commercialism of quote-unquote leaders of medicine is one of the oldest traditions in this country. Thus, we find in the laws of Virginia in 1639, reenacted in 1646, the following disquisition on medical commercialism. Quote, whereas, by the 9th Act of the Assembly, held the 21st of October, 1639, consideration being had and taken of the immoderate and excessive rates and prices exacted by practitioners of physic and chirurgery, and the complaints made to the then assembly of the bad consequences thereof, it is so happening through the said intolerable exactions that the hearts of diverse masters were hardened rather to suffer their servants to perish for want of fit means and applications than by seeking relief to fall into the hands of griping and avaricious men. Unquote. The law provided that a physician could be arrested and haled into court if accused of excessive charges. Then also there existed the tendency to blame the consequences of avarice of men on the medical profession. No doubt there were in the profession then also men who were imbued with the spirit of research and service to mankind, but the very character of such men bars them from success in the sordid game of medical politics. The bosses, or quote-unquote leaders, of organized medicine are generally the least scrupulous members of the profession. Men who care least for the value of human life, who play the game without conscience for the highest profits, and rarely are they derived from the rank of true scientists and healers. The entire early history of medicine in this country was a commercial war upon competitors by these medical bosses, who termed themselves quote-unquote regular practitioners. Looking backward, we now realize that many of these medical merchants were no less quacks than were some of those groups that they presumed to attack and persecute and sought to drive out. Much of their quote-unquote accepted practice, we now know, was rank murder. Among these murderous practices were copious bleeding and medication with large doses of tartar emetic. The short expectancy of life in those days was due in no small measure to the medical practices of these quote-unquote regulars. George Washington, for instance, because he had quinsy, was bled to death by a quote-unquote regular doctor. At least one school of practitioners of the time, the homeopaths, whom the quote-unquote regulars sought to bar from practice, represented a distinct advance. Their small doses did not poison patients, as did the copious doses of the quote-unquote regulars. State medical societies gain and lose license powers. History has a curious way of repeating itself in medical politics. The quote-unquote regulars organized themselves into state medical societies and played the game of politics with the same signal success as characterizes their successors' activities. They secured the passage of laws which gave the right of medical licensure to their societies, together with many other privileges. These powers they used to create for themselves monopolies of medical business. Competitors were labeled irregulars and quacks, and were denied the right to practice. Consultation of their members with the interdicted groups was barred, and those who refused to accept the discipline were persecuted. Since the operation of medical schools was the most lucrative phase of medicine, and it still is, the bosses of the societies established for themselves a monopoly of medical education and drove competitors out of business on the pretense of, quote, elevation of the standards of medical education, unquote, and, quote, the protection of public health, unquote. The discipline, which was designed to further the commercial interests of these groups, was given the specious name of quote-unquote ethics. No more false use has ever been made of the term quote-unquote ethics. But even in those days, medical politicians were shrewd publicity men. The power of these state medical societies and of their bosses under the early medical license laws waxed greatest about 1825. Openly and brazenly, the powers granted by the laws were used to establish monopolies of medical practice for the boss medical merchants and to mulct the public. The bitter commercial rivalry between individual medical bosses and their shameless wars for monopoly of the medical school business became public scandals. As a consequence, these laws had been repealed in almost every state, and the state medical societies were shorn of their powers before the end of 1849. American Medical Association formed. The medical merchants resolved to retain their monopoly of medical practice and to bar competition by flaunting and circumventing the law through a monopoly of medical education. It was for this purpose that the American Medical Association was organized on May 11, 1846, at a convention of the discredited state medical societies held in New York City. Dr. Nathan Smith Davis of New York City was the moving spirit of the association, and in later years he became the first editor of its journal. The objective for which the American Medical Association was founded, a monopoly of medical practice and of medical education, was not attained under the regime of Dr. Davis. He lacked the cunning, the ruthlessness, and the unscrupulousness requisite for the task. During his regime, the organization remained a loose assembly of state societies, all jealous of one another. The membership represented medical schools that were competing bitterly for business and destroying the very monopoly of medical practice which they sought. Amidst the dissension, new medical schools were cropping up daily, and the competition became more highly intensified than ever. Even powerful medical bosses could hardly get together enough students to make a decent living. Quote-unquote Doc George H. Simmons, quack, Upon this scene, there emerged in 1899, quote-unquote, Doc George H. Simmons, a monumental figure in the field of medical quackery and racketeering. He openly ruled the American Medical Association during the next 25 years and attained the objectives for which it had been founded. Immigrating from England in 1870, he promptly entered the newspaper field, becoming editor of the Nebraska Farmer, associate editor of the Nebraska State Journal, and field correspondent for the Kansas City Journal. He was an unscrupulous but astute politician. Impelled by the get-rich-quick spirit, Simmons left the field of journalism in 1884 and launched on a career of medical quackery in Lincoln, Nebraska. There is no evidence that Doc Simmons had ever had any medical education or any formal education, but this did not deter him from making conflicting claims to education in existing and non-existing institutions in quack advertisements of his professional talents in the Lincoln newspapers. In some of his advertisements, he called himself a homeopath. In others, he announced himself to be a, quote, licentiate of the Rotunda Hospital of Dublin, unquote. Though, unfortunately for his claims, the hospital never issued any licenses. Later in life, Simmons claimed attendance at Tabor College, Iowa, and at the University of Nebraska, which claim is equally questionable. In short, without any authenticated medical education, quote-unquote Doc Simmons launched into business as an advertising quack. Even for those rough and tumble days of medical racketeering, his newspaper advertisements were most lurid. He declared himself as a universal specialist in diseases of men, women, and children. Boldly, he announced, quote, a limited number of lady patients can be accommodated at my residence, unquote, which in those days was the form of announcement of abortionists. In addition to his personal advertising, Dr. Simmons' name was also carried by the newspaper advertisements of a beauty and massage parlor and of a fraudulent sanitarium, the Lincoln Institute. By the royal road of quackery and worse, quote-unquote Doc Simmons rapidly rose to wealth and influence. His political activities soon gained for him the position of Secretary of the Nebraska State Medical Society and of the Western Surgical and Gynecological Society. He put to use his experience in journalism and founded and became the editor of the Western Medical Review. After rising to a measure of eminence as a medical merchant and quack, quote-unquote Doc Simmons decided, with an eye to scaling further heights, that the time was ripe for him to secure a medical degree. He got his only authentic degree from one of the many diploma mills which sold them through the mails. While he was practicing in Lincoln, Nebraska, the ubiquitous quote-unquote doctor was registered as a medical student many hundred miles away at the Rush Medical College in Chicago. The prescriptions and birth certificates, which he wrote almost daily in Lincoln, Nebraska, indicate that he there engaged in a very active practice while supposed to be attending courses at Rush Medical College. Evidently, he had no difficulty in being in two places at the same time. In his position as officer of the Nebraska State Medical Society, Simmons shrewdly played the game of politics in the badly disorganized parent organization, the American Medical Association. Quote-unquote, Doc Simmons seizes control of the AMA. In 1899, he seized control of the moribund American Medical Association. He had himself appointed organizer and undertook to build up the membership. He was also appointed secretary of the association and editor of its journal. In 1901, at the St. Paul Convention, the association was officially, quote-unquote, reorganized, and Simmons grabbed for himself, in addition to his other jobs, the position of general manager of the association. Thus, Doc Simmons, notorious advertising quack and abortionist, self-avowed, quote-unquote, homeopath, and diploma mill licentiate, became the boss and dictator of the official organization of quote-unquote regular medicine, the American Medical Association. Quote-unquote Doc Simmons surrounded himself with a crew as unscrupulous as himself. One of his most trusted lieutenants was a secretary of the Kentucky State Board of Health, who at one time had been arrested for a shortage of over $62,000 in his accounts. He did not even bother to deny the criminal charges, but came to court armed with a governor's pardon. The bosses of the AMA had been well-schooled in the game of politics. With their aid, Simmons promptly went about the task of making the American Medical Association pay him and his gang higher returns than had the quack and abortion businesses or the Lincoln Institute. As spokesman of the official organization of the medical profession, Simmons gained complete control of immensely rich and almost virgin fields for exploitation. No more perfect combination can be conceived than the quote-unquote genius of an unscrupulous quack and the complete control of organized medicine to ensure a highly profitable enterprise. The tactics by which the medical rackets were built up are related in the following chapters. They include sham representative government, stuffed ballot boxes, and all varieties of fraud and illegality, organization steamroller, intimidation, libel, slander, strong-arm tactics, suppression of freedom of speech and publication, destruction of competing organizations and publications, monopolistic control of medical advertising that, combined with extortion and blackmail, won them a stranglehold on the drug and related industries. They also included alliance with the more unscrupulous and dangerous political and social forces that could not be mastered, censorship of the press, and every type of villainy that could conceivably further their sought objective. Quote-unquote code of ethics dictated by a quack. In this manner, medical racketeers once again attained the objective, gained, and lost in the first quarter of the 19th century an absolute control of the medical business. It is ironic to consider that it was an unregenerate quack who dictated the quote-unquote code of ethics which the member physicians of the AMA accept. Its origin gives some insight into its commercial character. Under the regime of Simmons and his henchmen, the American Medical Association utilized the control of the press, which it had gained, to dispel the malodor of its origin. Simmons resigned as editor in 1924 and became editor emeritus and general manager, where he remained until his death in 1937, the man behind the throne. He appointed, in his place, Dr. Morris Fishbein to perpetuate the regime. Fishbein himself proved to be a worthy successor. With Simmons lurking behind him, he carried the association to new heights of quackery and of power and dominion over the medical profession, medical education, the press, and the drug and allied interests. And that concludes part one of Your Life is Their Toy, Merchants in Medicine, by Emanuel Josephson, from 1948.